Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, so as you've heard me say so many times in the past, there is arguably nothing better than the first 4 days of March Madness. Now, the flip side of that is where we're at right now. There's arguably nothing worse than the come down. Come down Monday, aka the crash at the end of the ultimate dopamine binge. I mean, I think it goes beyond dopamine at this point. It's kind of like basketball crack. For 4 days, you're on the greatest trip slash bender ever. And then all of a sudden, it's full stop. It's like this adrenaline hangover, but much worse. It's jarring. It really is. But at least we got one of the best games of the weekend at the very end of the weekend. Because you got a couple of good teams, damn good teams, in Texas A&M and Houston. And, almost as importantly, two damn good jungle programs. Y'all know Kelvin Sampson and Buzz Williams are regulars around here. Hell, Buzz is so regular, he goes around quoting the Reinvention Project. My man told me he's listened to every single one of the episodes. I don't think I've listened to every single one of the episodes, and I've hosted every single one of the episodes. But then again, the way he coaches and the way he's all about mindset, I believe it. And he gets it. And he almost got Houston last night. I mean, damn, what a game. Cougs led by 12 with just over 2 minutes to play. They had a win probability at that time of 99.3%. People all across America probably turning that game off and going to bed. If that was you, you messed up. Because from that point forward, the Aggies poured in 17 in the final 2 minutes to force OT, and they capped it with this unbelievable buzzer beater at the end of regulation.
Right for the inbounder, looking, the bounce, Garcia.
Unreal play call, unreal execution, unreal shot, unreal finish, classic, classic madness, and then suddenly unreal, and then suddenly a major test for Houston. Were they going to get up off the mat? Were they going to be able to finish that game and get to the Sweet 16 in their four straight tournament? Could they make it in the end even with four dudes fouled out? And they were banged up. That's how they found themselves with Elvin at the stripe and the season on the line. I said Elvin, not Alvin, not Allen, not Elvin DeLoro. I'm talking about senior Ryan Elvin,
Thank you, Alan.
A senior walk-on. As in somebody who had only played 173 total minutes in 4 years before last night. He had only attempted 7 career free throws before he went to the line with a chance to put Houston up 4 in the final 20 seconds. I mean, just stop on that for a minute. A walk-on in that situation. But of course, you know, when you talk about Kelvin Sampson and you listen to him, it's not about the guy or the walk-on. It's about the culture, the whole thing. So, of course, Elvin, not Alvin. Elvin made one of two to put the game out of reach and send Houston back to the Sweet 16. If it were Alvin, he'd be all, dude, yes.
Dude, yes.
I just hit a free throw to put us in the Sweet 16. Dude, yes. Look at me.
Dude, yes.
Tell me how my ears taste. I'm Alvin. Well done, Alvin. Another masterclass from Kelvin Sampson. Now, you might argue, hey, listen, that shows some vulnerability. That shows they're gettable. Or you might argue, man, that shows some straight-up brass sack. And grit. And maybe it's both. Gritty as hell, though. Tough, tough win. In fact, Kelvin called it one of his favorite wins ever. He was loving it. I was loving him loving it, although I felt badly for Buzz, who's also my guy. Houston is on, survive, advance. Everybody knows that in order to get to the Final Four or win the championship, oftentimes you have to have a game like that. And you've got to get over in a game like that. And they did. And believe me, they're not the only one seed breathing massive sighs of relief right about now. Because I'm pretty sure Purdue is feeling relieved as hell. Even if they basically haven't broken a sweat yet in this tournament. You know where I'm going with that, right? Nobody was under more pressure coming in than those dudes. Nobody. Purdue absolutely had to get past opening weekend, the opening weekend this year. They could not take another huge tournament opportunity and set it on fire again. They could not go down as a one seed again. But for once, the Boilermakers are actually living up to the billing so far, living up to the hype. In fact, they're better than living up to the hype. They have been totally dominant, led, of course, by their gigantic big man, who seems like he's been around since the early 2000s and seems like he's only now hitting a growth spurt. I mean, my man Zach Edey is like, what, 8'7"? He's now the first player with 50-plus points and 35-plus boards through the first two games of the tournament in nearly 30 years. Who do you think was the last guy to do that? Pull this one and you're a legend. Unless you saw it posted somewhere. I love this throwback. That has not been done since the Dice Man did it. Antonio McDice back in 95. So that's pretty good. I also thought he had a pretty good response after he got done curb stomping Utah State about the pressure that's facing that program.
How much pressure did you feel to get out of this first weekend to get to the Sweet 16 after what happened last year?
No pressure, just basketball. We just did what we're supposed to do. We're going to keep moving on.
I can respect it. But we all know there was pressure. There was a lot of pressure. A ton of pressure. Massive pressure. I get it. You can't dwell on it. That'll get you beat. I mean, it accomplishes nothing. You know, kind of like dwelling on bad takes. If I did that, I could never move this show forward. Because, frankly, I see and receive a lot of bad takes. I know better than anybody how much of a waste of time it is to get hooked and dwell on bad takes. Because I get more of them hurled at me than anyone. But even I think it's pretty funny that there are all these haters out on social media who think that Edey is only good because he's that tall. I mean, that goofy take is so bad it's funny. That take is so bad and so lame that it actually cracks me up. Just not his coach. He doesn't see the same humor in it that I do. His coach actually thinks that that line of thinking, that take is moronic, that it's imbecilic. And he was even more pissed when he heard that. You're a moron if you think that guy's only that good because he's that tall. Because his coach was even more pissed when he heard that take than I am when I hear or see some of your very worst takes. Listen to Matt Painter when somebody tried to come at him with that.
They just shouldn't cover basketball. Yeah, you know, and so like you go to school and you learn things or whatever, but we all don't like every single class we're in, right? It's kind of a necessary evil. It's like going to work. Like you don't like everybody you work with, or you don't like certain parts of your job, and you know, it's tough, right? You got to be able to deal with like certain things that are difficult. And so I just think everybody should like take tests on their knowledge of what they're doing. Like I think all coaches should take a test so they understand refereeing. And I think all referees should take a test so they understand coaching. And I think all journalists should have to take a basketball quiz or a test, or anybody that tweets, they should have to be able to do it. And if they say something so moronic as that, then they should have to have a probationary status where they can't tweet for like 3 months. I think it'll help like society, you know, like just try to knock out the fools, you know, so they don't have to, you know, meet at the local Walmart and say things that don't make any sense.
Holy crap. That was incredible. I mean, I think he covered pretty much everything. That should cover the entire world in a nutshell. I love the way he tagged it, too. And then if they don't pass, they should all meet at the local Walmart and just chop it up with each other and talk about things that make no sense.
Yo.
That was incredible. What a rant. And by the way, he had a lot of good ideas in there. I'm sure the testing people before they're allowed into the JTP would greatly improve the quality of submissions to this program. But I'm also not sure that any of you could actually pass that test, or any test for that matter. If you had to test to get into the JTP, there would be no JTP. Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anybody? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call. Get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. And by the way, there is no JTP anyway. It's the JXP. That's the only problem with his rant. He's going on about Twitter. There is no Twitter. There is the X. And there is no JTP. There is the JXP. Start referring to yourselves as such. Anyway, saying that Zach Edey is only good because he's tall isn't that bright, nor is it that fair. But saying he's so big that his tiny number looks ridiculous on his uniform is actually quite fair, because it's actually quite true. It looks absurd. It looks like they put a toddler-sized number on a triple XL jersey. It looks like his number shrunk in the wash, but the rest of his jersey stayed the same. This dude's tall enough that he doesn't need a baby number on his back to make him look any bigger. It's not just the one seeds, though, that are feeling themselves. Looking at you, Clemson, and my dude, Brad Brownell. Clemson is riding the jungle karma right into the Sweet 16, and they're also reminding all the haters. I never thought Clemson hoops would be such a lightning rod, but it seemed like nobody was happy with this program going to the tournament. Nobody wanted them in the field. Their coach was under fire from the fan base. They backed into the tournament, allegedly, and the vibes were all off. Yeah, now what? Now the vibes are all incredible. Clemson is back in the Sweet 16 for the second time under this coach, and Clemson players have some free advice for all of those hating on the program and hating on said coach.
I mean, I don't really like usually doing this, but all those Fire Brownell guys can, you know, kiss it. So, you know, he's done an unbelievable job here. He's built this program for 14 years. He's been in the league for so long. Like, you don't get that every day. You don't get that everywhere.
Joe Girard of Clemson saying that, defending his coach. I like that. All those Fire Brownell guys can kiss it. Great quote.
Kiss it.
It's not just Clemson telling everybody to kiss it. It's actually the entire ACC, because since the first four, the ACC is now 8-0. 8-0 in the tourney. And they just put four teams in the Sweet 16. Even though everybody spent the last 2 weeks talking about how overrated and undeserving that conference is. Whoops! The ACC says, you all can just kiss it.
Kiss it. So.
ACC can't lose right now. Neither can the Big East. Now, if you think there was fire coming from the ACC, man, the Big East, that factory of hate, man, they are just cranking it out, aren't they? And once again, after a 12-4 performance in the tournament last year, the Big East, with only three teams in, still have three teams in. And they're 6-0, and UConn still cannot find a competitive game. Maybe the championship rematch that they've got coming up with Brian Dutcher in San Diego State will be more competitive than the actual national championship was. I hope so. Let's hope so. Because it would be nice to see UConn actually get pushed by somebody, anybody, before they just run roughshod over the entire field for their second title in a row. I mean, those were two absolute hospital jobs to start the tournament. And what about all that talk about how this tournament was so wide-ass open? I admit it, I was guilty as anybody of selling that narrative for the last few weeks. Wide-ass open. Yeah, not anymore. In fact, Dutcher himself, hell of a coach, big fan of his. And by the way, can we not sleep on San Diego State? And not because they went to the championship game last year. Nice, nice program. Really nice program. But Dutcher himself said it best. When talking about UConn, he called it, the tournament, the UConn Invitational. And he's not wrong. It really is UConn v. the field. That's how unbelievable they have looked so far, man. They play so hard. So hard, so hungry. And, of course, they are coached by the great Dan Hurley. Jungle favorite. But really, my top UConn request is not having to hear about Dan. I can't get enough of Dan Hurley. I love the guy. One of my favorite guys ever. Like, anything you tell me about this guy, I want to hear. I take it all in. Except his superstitions. I respect them. You all know I love the guy. You all know this is a huge Dan Hurley house. We had him in here right after they won it all. We had him in here 2 months ago talking about going for the repeat. You know I love the guy. I just don't need to hear about his underwear anymore. And I definitely don't need to see his underwear. I just don't need any more footage of his red dragon undies.
Dan Hurley is the king of superstition, especially on game day. He has to have 8 M&Ms before every game. He has to have a cup of bulletproof coffee on the sidelines at all times, and do not knock it over. And he has to wear the same suit and socks and shoes and, yes, the same red dragon underwear. And don't worry, it is clean. His wife, Andrea, travels with a portable washing machine. I mean, you can't make that up, Ian.
And apparently they travel a Maytag repairman with them as part of the crew.
No, they do not. Who has a portable washing machine? I didn't even know that existed.
Ian's got a good point. A portable washing machine. The hell does that even mean? Is there a portable dryer? Do you check the portable washing machine, or does it fit in the overhead compartment?
Portable
I guess
washing
if you fly
machine.
Private, it doesn't really matter. Whatever it is, I'm not sure anybody knew that that existed until last night. Just like nobody knew that Coach's red dragon underwear looked like that until last night. I really wish I didn't know, because unfortunately I cannot unsee it. I don't know what was worse. The footage of Coach's boxers, or the sound coming from the Grand Canyon cheering section. Yo, Grand Canyon, I hate to say that I was rooting for you to lose, especially against Mr. Wrong Spot, Wrong Time, Nate Oates. But America's going to turn on you, and that's not easy to do when you're a Cinderella, and you know everybody's going to pull for the dog. But America is going to turn on you when your fans show up and do this.
On the post, Grand Canyon takes the box. Count it for Grant Foster.
Well, it starts with the great hands. Jovan Blackshear gets a hand on this basketball. They got numbers, but he felt this the entire
Who was being murdered in their section? That's what it sounded like when they flashed that footage of Hurley's Red Dragons. Hey, everybody. Hey, y'all, look at this.
Count it for Grant Foster.
Well, it starts with the great hands. Jovan Blackshear gets a hand on this basketball.
Here's my reaction. When I woke up this morning and I realized there would be no more madness until Thursday, and I thought, how the hell am I going to get to Thursday? And then all of a sudden, this.
Well, it starts with the great hands. Jovan Blackshear.
Chuck said, boss, you all right? Are you all right? And I responded to him by saying,
Count it
Well, it starts with the great hands.
Jim, what's up? What's up? That's the sound of withdrawal.
Well, it starts with the great hands. Jovan Blackshear.
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Of course. This time, though, don't make a shake or eat a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire, and it goes wherever you go. To the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Let's go to Texas. Kevin in Texas. Good to have you, Kevin. What's going on?
How's it going, Rome?
Good. You?
Doing pretty bad.
Listen, actually.
Houston was on their toes last night. They were shaking. A&M had them. We had them. I'm tired of Buzz Williams thinking this is the Wade Taylor show. How are you the head coach of an SEC team and you think Wade Taylor is the answer? I get it. He's a god among men when it comes to the court, but he wasn't there last night, and they were grateful Radford showed up. Wade Taylor has been the answer and also the problem all season. And as an Aggie, you can ask anybody, any A&M basketball fan, that we know it's Wade Taylor or nothing. And if you're the head coach of an SEC team, how are you relying on one guy? It should be the Buzz Williams show, not the Wade Taylor show, and I think it's time for him to go. I'm tired of it. What are you going to do when Wade Taylor's gone? I'm tired of it. I'm out.
All right, Kevin. Appreciate it. I don't agree with it, but I appreciate it. This is what I'm talking about. This is why I'm here. I'm here for it. That's an A&M fan. You can hear it in his voice. That guy was screaming last night. He is so pissed. He's had enough. He's seen enough. Let's go to Charleston. Miles, good to have you. Miles, what's going on?
Rome, not much. Just enjoying NC State as an 11 seed in the Sweet 16. Seems like the only time we get to the Sweet 16 since we won the championship back under Valvano is when we're a double-digit seed. So hoping it goes a little better this time. A little antsy about a Duke matchup in the Elite Eight. But, Rome, I just got a quick question. It seems like there's one Big West team, their futility was somewhat humorous for us that enjoyed watching them. You know, like Boise State, when was the last time they won anything? Was it when they beat Oklahoma back in like 2006? Anyway, Jim, war NC State, march on to the Final Four. War Matt in L.A., never calling again. See you, buddy.
All right, see you, bro. Again, why is everybody dragging our conference? So let me tell you about something. The other day, I come across a product that all of us should be carrying around. It's amazing. It's something different for fresh breath. It is an incredible product called Zelman's Minty Mouth. And guys, it is a game changer. If you're up in the grill of somebody else and you're making your case for whatever it is, make sure your breath is fresh. Zelman's cleans your breath in a way that other mints don't and can't, because it's not just a mint. It's a functional breath freshener capsule that you swallow. It's clinically tested against the toughest offenders, even garlic and onions. You just pop two or three in your mouth, suck the minty coating, then swallow the capsule for the confidence of fresh, clean breath that lasts 4 hours. The product is like nothing else you've ever tried. It fights bad breath in your mouth. It then goes right down to your gut. This is the ultimate hack to get rid of coffee, garlic, or smoker's breath. You're going to like having the confidence of long-lasting fresh breath, or you get your money back guaranteed. These folks will give you your money back. Not that you're going to want it, but they will. They've got free shipping if you order 3 packs or more, and trust me, you're going to want more. And nobody likes to pay for shipping. Go to Zelmans.com right now. That's Zelmins.com. Right now, you'll get 15% off when you use the promo code ROME. Zelmins.com. You do have to use the code ROME to get your 15% savings, ROME. I'm speaking of Wally Szczerbiak. Wally, it is always great to run you down this time of year. Thanks for making time for it. Wally, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Loving this tournament as always. A lot of craziness and a lot of chalk in some regions. So it's been a lot of fun.
Boy, that's the truth, right? All those things are so true. In fact, since you've spent so many hours in studio tracking everything going on in March Madness, Wally, let me open it up to you. What are your biggest takeaways from the first couple of rounds of the tourney?
I just think Purdue's dominance, you know, exercising the demons in the last couple of years, losing to FCU in the first round as a 16 seed, and then also losing to St. Peter's, the year before as a 15 seed. This looks like a completely different team. They obliterated the Utah State Aggies, who were the champions of the Mountain West in the regular season. And it seemed like they could have won that game by 60 if they didn't pull their foot off the gas, how well they were playing. They retooled their roster. They added some impact transfers. The freshman guards, Lawyer and Braden Smith, have a year under their belt and have gotten a little bit bigger, stronger, and more confident. And Zach Edey's even better than he was last year, and he was National Player of the Year. So it looks like there's a collision course between UConn and Purdue setting up in the national championship game with how good those two teams look.
We were talking to Wally Szczerbiak. So what about the defending national champs, UConn? They're the number one overall seed. They've won 9 in a row en route to the Sweet 16. How do you think this team, Wally, compares to last year's team as they get ready to play San Diego State in a rematch of that title game?
Well, they were a better regular season team, that's for sure. Last year's team struggled a little bit in conference. They lost, I think, 5 out of 7 games throughout the Big East slate. And they came in, I believe, as a 4 seed, winning the national championship. But then come tournament time, everything came together. They had a lot of NBA talent that's thriving in the NBA. And this year's team, I would say, is just as good. Maybe not as good as far as NBA talent on paper, but right now the way those pieces click, the way they gel, and the coaching job that Danny Hurley has done has been absolutely outstanding. To get this team refocused after dominating and winning the championship last year, it's been pretty impressive the way he's gotten these guys to play every single night.
I agree. Wally Szczerbiak joining us. Wally, you mentioned the chalk. I mean, when you consider all the crazy results that we saw in the conference tournaments and even some upsets in the first round of the NCAA tournament, are you surprised at how chalky things were this past weekend?
Well, last year was the craziest tournament in my memory. How many upsets just continued to win. A school like Florida Atlantic, you know, continues to go on and make it to the Final Four. San Diego State, a team that, you know, really hadn't done that much in the NCAA tournament, and then all of a sudden they go to the Final Four, and the Mountain West as a conference hadn't done much either. They go to the Final Four. Miami comes out of nowhere, makes the Final Four. You know, I don't think there were any one seeds in the Final Four last year. I think it was just a crazy year all around. And, you know, this year I think it played out more similar, where you'll have a few upsets in the first round, but then when you think, let me ride with Yale again in the second round, let me ride with the Antelopes, you know, of Grand Canyon in the second round, and James Madison, you know, maybe some people pick James Madison to beat Duke, and it's like, no, that's not happening this year. This is kind of going back to where you have one or two crazy upsets in the first round, but then in the second round, the dominant teams start to win, and I think that's as a result. You've had a lot of chalk, and that's going to set up for a very good Final Four. We're going to get the teams that deserve to be in the Final Four based on how they played in the regular season, and they earned high seeds, and it looks like that's how the Final Four is going to play out.
Wally Szczerbiak breaking it all down. Well, you mentioned JMU and Duke. I was really impressed with James Madison coming in. I didn't think they'd necessarily beat Duke. At the same time, I thought they'd show up. I didn't think they'd get blown out like that. Watching Duke right now, have they gone to a level whereby you can say they are a legitimate national championship contender right now?
Absolutely. You know, that team has a lot of upside talent. And I love the way John Shire's doing it. He's doing it with, you know, some younger guys that a great recruiting class, kind of like the old way to win in college basketball. And it puts a lot of pressure on your coach to mature your players quickly throughout the course of their freshman year and their younger years in college. And John Shire's done a great job of that. And then in the biggest moment, they played their best game. And I think that's what a lot of other schools and people feared out of Duke. You know, when they put the pieces together, when they play their best, and when those young guys play up to their capabilities and their talent level, they're a scary team. And we saw that because they completely blew James Madison off the floor, a lot like the way Purdue blew Utah State off the floor.
Speaking of that, well, going back to Zach Edey for a minute, I mean, if you're Gonzaga, and Gonzaga's still there, but how do you think Gonzaga goes about, or how would anybody go about trying to contain Edey at this point, who's been absolutely dominant in the first two rounds?
Well, you have to hope you have a little bit bigger body than Utah State had. And there are some teams that do have a little bigger, but bigger bodies. The key is you got to, and I remember when I played against Yao Ming and Shaq. You got to kind of start making body contact with them at the free throw line. Just get in their way so they just can't walk straight down to the block and just camp out and post up. Because once they turn their body, once they put their shoulders out, you can't get around them to get any deflections. You can't play them really on the high side. Because then it's just, they're just going to lob it up top and just catch a dunk or just catch it close to the basket. And then they're so big and wide that it's over. So the key is you got to try to get them a little bit off their spot. Instead of a 5 foot post up, try to get it to 8 to 10 feet. And then once they catch it out there, they're not going to be as effective. A lot easier said than done because you're giving away a ton of weight, a ton of strength, and obviously a ton of size. And I was just so impressed with the way Zach Edey was able to seal. It didn't matter how good the entry pass was. It could be a little off target. It could be from a bad angle. It's getting to him. He's going to catch it. And once he catches it, you better bring a double team on the pass. Because if you wait, he's just going to turn and shoot right over and get a bucket, or he's going to draw a foul. And I love what Stan Van Gundy was saying yesterday. You can't keep fouling him. You can't bail him out. If he catches it low, you got to live with it. Just a 2-point layup or a 2-point little 3-foot hook. And just go back on the other end of the floor, put him in pick and roll, and hope that you can score a lot of points on them because he's out there on the floor. That's your only attack mode against him.
We're talking to Wally Szczerbiak, breaking everything down. We've got a couple of more moments with him. You know, Wally, in terms of you can't foul him every single time, when you look at Houston last night, they survive. I'm curious, and they advance. When you see them, what do you think? I mean, the fact that they blew that lead late and had to win in overtime, does that show you that they're vulnerable, or does that show you how tough they are and how much grit they have?
Combination of both. That team is a little banged up, and that's tough at this time in the year because, you know, obviously they intimidate teams, they outwork teams, they out-physical teams, and they play ultra hard. And that's how they, you know, kind of just wear people down and wear individual matchups down. But right now they're a little banged up. You know, they're not the most imposing team as far as size. Their guards are a little bit small. It puts a lot on Jamal Shedd. Listen, this tournament's all about surviving advance, but do I think they have the capabilities to win the national championship? I don't think so. If they were healthy, maybe, but the way they're banged up right now, it's showing a lot of concern the way Texas A&M was able to bully the bully, so to speak, a little bit in that game yesterday.
I think you're right. Wally, before you go, Shaka Smart has got Marquette back in the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2013. Great story. They take on a red-hot NC State team. Wally, how do you explain NC State winning seven games, not just seven games, but seven of the toughest games at the toughest time of the year in 12 days to get where they are? How did that team throw the switch and turn it around?
Well, I think we underestimated the ACC a little bit, first and foremost. We're seeing how good that league is. Clemson, Duke, and Carolina have just rolled in the first two rounds. And then a team like NC State is playing against those teams in a league that didn't fare well in the non-conference. So as a result, they couldn't, you know, just they couldn't build up an at-large resume because they didn't get enough good opportunities according to computers. But once their backs were against the wall, they showed how good their individual talent is. I love DJ Burns. I mean, he is must-watch TV. He has such a soft, feathery touch as a lefty. He's a huge human being, huge. But he just plays the game the right way. He's probably the best passing big man in all of college basketball, the way he reads double teams and kicks it out to his teammates. Then DJ Horn has been outstanding. Diarra has been great as far as a wing defender. He can really pose problems for another team's leading scorer. So they put it all together at the right time, and it's good to see. It's going to be a fun game against Marquette, but Marquette is also one of the most fun teams to watch offensively. We saw it against Colorado. They play pure basketball. They run great sets, and they can really score, and they have great scorers. So it's going to be a fun game and a good matchup.
So, Wally, one last thought. You got nice on TikTok. You rattled off your picks for the entire bracket in 43 seconds in a video. How are your Final Four projections looking after the first weekend?
The only one I'm missing is Kentucky. And I think a lot of people just believed in Kentucky when, you know, the meat and potatoes are not there, and that's the problem with Kentucky. So that's the only one I missed. I still have Tennessee alive. I still have UConn alive, and who's my other one?
Carolina.
Carolina. I think I have Carolina still alive. So, you know, I still have three of the four, but, you know, that Kentucky one hurts because my daughter's a junior at Kentucky, and we were looking forward to meeting up at the Final Four and hopefully watching them play there.
So leave us with that thought. What's next for them and Cal?
Listen, we were debating that last weekend. A lot of people are calling for Cal to move on. It's a huge buyout. I just think Cal still gets elite talent. And you have to be careful what you wish for. I know that's a great job and all the resources are there. But, you know, when you kind of step back from a guy who's had a lot of success and everything, I mean, this team this year, if they didn't just not play well in one individual game, and, you know, the finger can be pointed at Cal, no question. He's got to get his guys ready to play against a team like Oakland. And you can't let Golkey go 10 for 20 from the three-point line. I just don't know if there's another better option out there. So I think the Kentucky Wildcats end up sticking with Cal for a few more years.
I'm with you on that one. Roy Zerbiak, my guest. He is a college basketball analyst for CBS Sports, also a studio analyst for the Knicks broadcast for MSG Network. While I really appreciate you, I know you got to be gassed. Well, no, you're fine. You're Wally Zerbiak, but I know how much time you're putting in. Thanks for making time for us, Wally. Really appreciate you.
You're the man. We go way back to the college days and the rookie year days with Gary Wishart and our guys. So, I'll always be with you there, Jim. Good times always.
Means the world to me, man. I appreciate that so much. Thank you. Let's talk for a minute about O'Reilly Auto Parts, because they're in the business of keeping your car on the road and offering helpful service and parts knowledge that you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They have thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. And they can also test your battery for free. If it needs to be replaced, they will help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. When you need a specialty tool to finish the job, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and ask about their loaner tool program. Simply pay a refundable deposit and borrow the right tool, then get your deposit back when it's returned. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome.
Brad Underwood. Brad, always good to have you on. Great to have you back. How you doing, Brad?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Always good to have you on. So let me start right here. What's it mean to you, your players, and the school overall to be headed to the Sweet 16 for the first time since 05 when the Illini made it to the national championship game?
Yeah, it means a lot. You know, we've got just great administrative support. We've done so much for our facilities here. We sell out every night. Our fans travel. This is a heck of a program, and it's crazy that it's been that long. But you know, we got upset a couple years ago as a one seed, and now it's nice to advance to that second weekend.
Brad Underwood's joining us. In fact, you went viral with your team's postgame celebration. You guys were having a great time after you hammered Duquesne by 26. Whose idea, Brad, was it to break out the Super Soakers, you or somebody else?
It was our strength coach, to be honest. He gets all the blame. So I usually am the one who gets doused. We celebrate winning after every game. I think it's really hard to win, and it takes a lot of effort, and I want guys to have fun in those moments. But it was actually really nice to be able to give back a little bit instead of take all the water. So that Super Soaker now, that thing holds a lot of water. That was fun. We were like a bunch of sixth graders in middle school.
I see it working. Brad Underwood joins us. And then the euphoria itself is understandable. Like, to your point, we celebrate after every win because it's hard to win. But this year is your seventh trip to the tournament and the first time you've gotten past the round of 32. How was this group able to elevate its play when it mattered most, winning 9 of your last 10 and getting to the Sweet 16?
Yeah, we got healthy, and that helped. The season is a long roller coaster ride, and obviously we played six games without Terrence Shannon, and we had to adapt to that. We made some early season, 7-8 games in, we made some changes offensively, which have elevated us a great deal and helped us. But you know, it's kind of we're on the upswing, getting everybody healthy. playing our best basketball, you know, at the right time we've been very blessed that way.
Illinois head basketball coach Brad Underwood joins us. Brad, you mentioned Terrence Shannon. He missed the 6 games because he was charged with rape and sexual battery in December and was suspended, and then a federal judge granted that temporary restraining order against the university in January. I understand that you're very limited, that neither you or he can talk about the legal proceedings. I'm curious, how did you handle that internally with the team?
You know, this is a very, very mature, we're an old team. This is a team that is very connected. They understood the seriousness of that situation. And yet, you know, it was all about, let's worry about the guys that are playing and let's be concerned and try to get them in the best situation to win games and move forward. And we literally just took it day by day, practice by practice. We elevated our offense during that time, and we found a way. We were, you know, I think we were 4-2 in that stint, and played some very, very good basketball. And upon his return, we just kind of kept growing and kept getting better through that process.
You know, Brad, when you talk about the maturity of the team overall, when you and I spoke in December, you talked about how your roster was fairly unique in the sense that you did not lean heavily on the transfer portal to build it. So that said, how much do you think the team has benefited from the relationships that they've been able to build on and off the floor because they've been together?
Oh, there's no doubt. And we've got guys that play for the joy of the game. They play because they love basketball. They work. There's that common bond there. This group, you see it, you know, in our post game, we've got tremendous character. We've got really funny guys. They're best friends off the court. We have not had one divisive moment in the locker room with guys about anything all season long, and that's very unique. I've had so much fun coaching this team because of that, and there's been no agendas. It's been very, very fun to be a part of.
Man, it's got to be great to come to the gym every single day. It's got to be great to go to the weight room every single day where the guys enjoy each other. You know, I thought, Brad, there was a really interesting piece in The Athletic, a profile on you, and you were talking about something that was interesting to me in the sense that, like, you've got the Big Ten, and it's a conference with a real identity. It's a rugged league. It's a physical league. There's a very distinctive style of play. So if you want to have success in that conference, you have to build the roster a certain way. However, does that approach to roster building also translate to the NCAA tournament, or did it require that maybe you rethink how you build it?
Yeah, it forced me to rethink, and I say that. And we were a one seed. We had Kofi Coburn, two-time All-American, great player. And yet, you know, this has been a big league, and arguably one of the best teams in the country is Purdue this year with Zach Edey, two-time National Player of the Year. And yet, those guys are so rare and so unique. I knew we weren't always going to continually have one of those guys. And so, okay, how do we sustain? How do we get better? How do we develop? And so we set out to get big wings. I say this all the time. You know, we start 5 power forwards right now, and we play a little bit different. But we did that with intention. And we're very versatile. We can play a lot of different ways. We can play a lot of different lineups. And it's been very beneficial for us throughout the course of the season. And it's been matchup-based, more kind of an NBA-type look. But been very, very good for us. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's clearly working. I love that line that you've got 5 power forwards. Another reason why you are where you are, Brad Underwood, my guest, the play of Marcus Damask. He's playing some of his best ball on the biggest stage. He scored in double figures in 4 straight games. He led your team in assists during the season. How much does the grad student's ability to consistently knock it down from the perimeter impact pretty much everything else you're looking to do offensively?
Yeah, when he's making threes, we're a handful because Marcus is going to have the ball in his hands. He's a 2,000 point scorer in his career. He's a very high IQ player. He's 6'6", 220. He's got a great body. And when we play our booty ball, so to speak, you know, he forces a lot of double teams. you know, against Morehead State in the first round. He has a triple-double, one of only nine other players to have a triple-double in an NCAA tournament game. And he just takes what the defense gives him, and that elevates everybody else. And again, we're fortunate to have a guy that's stepped in and impacted us at that high level.
So before you go, a couple of quick things, Brad. Booty ball, it's another funny line. You, as part of that profile, they talked about you and your friendship with Jay Wright. What did the two of you talk about as it relates to booty ball? Like, I mean, coaches compare notes and share notes, but now that Jay's on the other side and he's down in the media, what kind of things did you talk about, and did any of it resonate with you to the point where you implemented what he said?
Yeah, a lot of it resonated. I mean, a lot of conversations in terms of, you know, I go back, and Jalen Brunson, of course, being a Chicago guy, is, you know, everybody's familiar with in this state. But the way he played, and you know, they Villanova didn't turn the ball over much. They got great shots. They didn't have a true center. They had a five-man who could step out and shoot. And we were built very similar to that. And so it was just a matter of talking philosophically through some things and understanding things. And then a week later, there's a follow-up phone call. Hey, what about this and this and this? So, you know, I've stolen a lot of things that worked for Jay. And we've created a few on our own out of it. But it's just been something that stylistically has worked great with our team, and not afraid to change for the betterment of these guys so they can have success.
You bet. So one last thought, Brad. The next one's always the biggest one, and you're getting ready to take on Iowa State, a team that really put it to Houston to win the Big 12 tourney title game. From what you've seen on tape, what are you expecting from the Cyclones on Thursday in Boston?
Well, T.J. Otzenberger does a great job, and defensively they are they're very good. They're the number one defense. We're the number one offense. You know, you beat Houston twice, you're doing something right. And they're tough. They're athletic. You know, they'll want to make it a rock fight. And, you know, I expect a heck of a battle. It's two good basketball teams, and you know, both teams are playing their best basketball right now.
Great matchup. Can't wait to see it. Illinois on to the Sweet 16. Their head coach is Brad Underwood. Brad, you've always been great for the program. I appreciate the access, appreciate the relationship. Thank you very much, and good luck this week in Boston.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate you.
Now, as we wait for Shohei, let me update you on this. If there's anything that his interpreter, Ipe, loves more than gambling, allegedly, it might be lying, allegedly. Now, we didn't find out much new information over the weekend about the actual gambling debt repayment at the center of the Shohei scandal, but we did find out that his translator will apparently lie about almost anything and everything, and apparently has lied about almost anything and everything. It's become pretty clear that one of the reasons why it's so hard to get any of the facts straight on this whole Shohei translator gambling scandal is that apparently Ipe does not get the facts straight. Period. Like, as a general rule, he doesn't really do facts.
So get your facts straight.
Which is pretty brutal. It's a pretty brutal characteristic or trait for a translator. I mean, wouldn't you think that a translator's most important job would be accuracy? Like, that's the most important thing, right? Because, you know, it's the job. Translating what somebody else says as accurately as possible is the job. Unless, of course, you stole $4 million plus from that person, in which case you might not translate anything accurately at all. Now, again, I don't know what happened. I'm still not sure whether it was story A, where Shohei covered his buddy's gambling debts, or story B, where Ipe stole the money and Shohei had no idea that he was gambling or that the money had been stolen. Or maybe the third story or something in between. But what does seem pretty clear is that Ipe has a proclivity for changing stories. He's done it way too many times to be comfortable or believable. And he is comfortable telling way too many versions of the story.
And he clearly plays it way too fast and way too loose with the facts to be anybody's translator, let alone the translator for one of the most famous and influential athletes on the entire planet. I mean, going back to what I said earlier, this guy even lied about graduating from college. He says he graduated from UC Riverside, except UCR debunked that. They not only debunked that, they said that he never even attended. They've got no record of him being there. Uh-oh! That's not awkward or anything. Another member of the UC system, UC family. Guy that I love, Eric Burns, in very graphic terms, was on the X platform asking, who the bleep lies about going to UC Riverside? Right? EB. Like I said, I'm just relieved that it was Riverside and not Santa Barbara, because that would have been a reason to go. Then again, UCSB would have never let this dude run around claiming he's one of us. We would have nipped that crap in the bud. That doesn't fly with us. I mean, Riverside, sure. Santa Cruz, maybe. No offense, Alvy. But not the Gauchos. He knew better. That guy was not going to lie that he went to UC Santa Barbara, because nobody would believe it. We'd check up on it. We wouldn't let that go. Probably would have been better off going with something like UC Merced. Or Santa Cruz, Alvy. Clearly, that liar is not Gaucho material. He's not, well, whatever the Riverside mascot is either. They debunked it. You gotta love people. Like, it's bad enough if you pull out just short of graduation. Sorry about that, Highlanders. I mean, it's one thing, like, if you come up a quarter or a few units shy, that's bad enough. If you don't graduate, you don't have a diploma, don't put it on your resume. But to not have ever attended the school at all and saying that you're a graduate? But then again, why is that so surprising? He also lied about his professional credentials. He lied about working as a translator for the Red Sox in 2010 prior to meeting Shohei. He probably went to Team Shohei and said, yeah, oh yeah, I work for the Red Sox. I've done this. He also lied about working as a translator for the Yankees during spring training in 2012. I mean, Team Shohei probably sat this guy down, looked at his resume and said, says here you went to UC Riverside. Yep. Says here you also translated for the Boston Red Sox. Yep. And the Yankees. Yep. Okay. All we need is Shohei to sign off on this and we're good. That's a lot of lies. Dude, I think that you're confusing translation with making crap up. I mean, is this dude, how do we even know he's a translator? Because once you tell that many lies, then we have to assume that everything coming out of your mouth is a lie. Or in the very least, question anything you say because you keep lying. Are you even an interpreter? Do you even speak Japanese? Is that a lie too? Do you even know Shohei? Well, yeah, actually, you ripped him off, allegedly, so you must know him. I don't know if you know him, but apparently you know his routing number and his bank account, allegedly. I think we already think we barely know anything about Shohei. Imagine if everything we've heard about this guy came through Ipe, and Ipe just made it all up. It sounds ridiculous, but he's lied about so many other things. How can we trust anything from that dude right about now? And yo, Team Shohei, I mean, bad enough mistake to run this guy out to ESPN.com and let him say what he wanted to say. But maybe long before any of it got to that, maybe you'd run a background check. It's not that hard to do. Like, I get the Angels maybe not doing some enormous check on the guy because he already was with Shohei. He came with Shohei. But shouldn't you do a check on an employee? Maybe a basic resume check? Like, make sure that any part of the resume, any part of it is legit? I mean, I can understand how maybe it slipped through the cracks with the Angels for 6 years. What I don't get is how he got hired in the first place. Forget due diligence. It seems like Team Shohei did no diligence on this one. Their diligence was, well, the guy says he translates. He says he worked for the Red Sox. He says he worked for the Yankees. He says he's a UC guy. Damn. Impressive. We're sold. You're hired. Now, of course, the conspiracy theorists are all going to say it's all part of the smokescreen, that Shohei is the degenerate, that it's all a campaign to make Ipe look shady and guilty. Maybe, because the dude absolutely looks shady and guilty. It absolutely is shady to lie about your college degree. It absolutely is shady to lie about your previous employment and your resume. Obviously. It's not the kind of thing that totally innocent fall guys do, right? It's actually exactly kind of the thing that reckless crooks who rip off millions of bucks and run up massive gambling debts do, right? It'd be much easier for me to put on my tinfoil hat and sit with you conspiracy theorists had we not caught this guy in so many lies already. But I know. For some of you, you've already made up your mind because the conspiracy theory is just so much more fun and it's going to get you so much more run. So you're going to go with that. For some of you, Shohei is Pete Rose, Michael Jordan, Phil Mickelson, and 99's wife all rolled into one.
You know, toughen up.
He'll never be able to shake the conspiracy theories, so he may as well lean into them and embrace them. Shohei's walk-up music for Dodger Stadium in his debut Thursday should be the X-Files theme. Then he could come out for his first Dodgers AB in LA with his helmet wrapped in tinfoil. Personally, I'm still trying to figure out what the hell is really going on here. What actually did happen. Because we've heard like four versions of the story, and none of them are convincing. Shohei is supposed to speak today. We'll probably get next to no clarification or no information from that. But maybe he says something that finally makes some sense. We can only hope. But I've got a feeling this is going to get worse before it gets better, and we're not going to get any resolution anytime soon, not with the feds involved, and not with the MLB finally getting around to its own investigation. Not that I expect MLB to ever do anything with Shohei unless he actually did bet and bet on baseball. The only thing I know for sure is that Ipe is all about lying. It really looks like he also really likes to gamble. But I know without a doubt that he absolutely loves lying out his ass. I don't know about the gambling, but I feel pretty convinced about the lying. Never mind the sports book. If there was a lying book, Ipe would be posted up all day, every day, taking that lying book for all it's worth. They'd ban him from every lying book in town. He'd be walking around with disguises, trying to sneak into the lying book so he can lie and keep getting paid. Dude, you lie so much, you don't even know you're lying anymore. A lying book. He'd crush that. He'd be known all over town. Yeah, it's Ipe. There'd be pictures of him up in the lying book, like in the lunchroom. Don't let him in. Don't let him in. He'll take all our money at the lying book. Allegedly. My man, keep the UC system out your mouth. We're not having it. I'm not having it. Alvy's not having it. Eric Burns obviously is not having it. Quote,
who would lie about going to UC Riverside? Reminds me of my good buddy Tom Tolbert. When he played for the Clippers, he used to listen to the show back in the day, and he called up and he wanted to be on. And there used to be moron clones that would try and pretend to be people they weren't to try to get on, to try to jerk with us. So I had my call screener at the time run through a bunch of questions to Tommy T, and he dutifully answered four or five. And then he finally goes, "Dude, who would lie about being Tom Tolbert? Put me on with Rome."
Good night now!